Code Winds, Episode 10. Nico Bavacqua discusses JavaScript tooling, app design, and his upcoming book, JavaScript Application Design. Welcome to the Code Winds podcast, where we cover leading-edge web developer news and training with an emphasis on Node, JavaScript, and HTML5. My name is Jeff Barczewski, and I am here to help you navigate the winds of change. In this episode, I caught up with Nico Bavacqua, a full-stack developer from Buenos Aires, who was speaking at JSConf 2014. We discussed JavaScript tooling, app design, and his upcoming book, JavaScript Application Design. The links and show notes for this podcast are available at codewinds.com/10, as in episode 10. Let's get started.
I'm here with Nico Bavacqua at JSConf, and Nico just got through presenting his talk on Build First, and I wanted to sit down and talk with Nico for a little bit further about Building First and all of the concepts behind that. So, Nico, what can you tell me about Build First and what the audience should know?
Okay. Build First is basically a philosophy behind how to build your applications. And it's not something that just applies to JavaScript, but since JavaScript is interpreted, it's easier to not do it. Right,
right. Yeah, absolutely.
And get away with it.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to promote is not going for that, for the easy way out, but rather doing the extra work to put together a build process the first thing out the door. And that'll help you with your testing and with everything that you do in your application. Also, the process around it, because it's I've been in projects where they said like, we'll get to building and testing, and you just don't.
It never happens.
And if you do, it's like a complete mess, because it's just tagged in as an afterthought, and it's not something that's built into the application like it should be.
Yeah, and I imagine too, you know, probably one of the things that you talk about in your book is just saving time. I mean, you know, instead of saving it later, it's saving it throughout the entire development process, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, because every time you need to do something, if it's automated, it's just a little bit faster than doing it, you know, manually or whatever.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, and that's one of the critical aspects of Build First, that it enables you to do stuff like continuous development, which not nearly as many people as could do it.
Yeah.
And it's something that for example, if you have to use Browserify, you must have continuous development. But if you don't, you might get away without it. But it's way faster if you do, because you may automate your files saving when you switch tabs, and you could also let your browser refresh itself and have your build run itself. So all you need to do is write the code and switch to the browser, and that's it.
Yeah, good. Okay, that's awesome. And so what are some of the tools that that you talk about in the book, or things that people should look at in determining how to do continuous integration and continuous deployment, or continuous development, and all that?
Right. Yeah. In the book, I use Grunt to compose the build processes that I talk about, but I tried as hard as possible to make Grunt a secondary thing.
Okay.
And make the primary theme be the theory behind how to put together the build process, so that you could build it with Gulp, NPM, or wherever you want to.
Yeah. Okay.
as far as continuous integration and deployments go, I mentioned Travis CI as the continuous integration tool of choice. And then for deployments, I made a choice where I went for Heroku with the deployment process, but in the code samples, I also included a sample that explains how to deploy to Amazon EC2 through Grunt.
Excellent. Yeah, great. The in your research in that, have you went as far as looking at the various ways to do automated builds of instances, maybe like with Chef or Puppet, Ansible, Nix, Docker, any of those kinds of things? Have you researched any of those at all? Or
No.
Okay. Yeah, there's so many things. I was just curious if...
Yeah,
if,
yeah. If, no, I played with EC2, mm-hmm. and but I haven't really gotten into the virtualization part of things.
Yeah, me neither. I mean, I need to... That's one of the things on my list to go through.
Yeah,
so,
definitely.
Yeah. okay, and then as far as Grunt and Gulp and NPM were some of the things that you mentioned about... doing automated builds, how would you categorize those, or when might one person use one versus the other?
Right. You know? Yeah, I think Grunt is the best choice for the largest amount of people.
Okay.
And with Gulp, there's this funny thing where you may like it if you're like a node developer doing other stuff, and that you care about Windows and that sort of thing.
Okay.
And then NPM is more for people who are more used to working with low-level CLIs and whatnot. And right now I'm using all three, really.
Yeah. But right.
It's mostly like at work, you're probably going to use Grunt because everyone kind of knows it and is comfortable with it. Gulp is nice for quickly hacking together like a release flow or something like that. And NPM is really the best option out there, but it's harder to put all the pieces together.
Yeah, okay.
So it's something more for personal projects.
Yeah. And, I think, so if you were a node person, if you're familiar with streams and pipes and that, then I guess maybe Gulp might be a little more familiar than versus someone that's not. I mean,
right,
that's kind of hard.
Yeah,
to
that's what I meant with the Grunt part. Like,
yeah.
If you are a C-sharp developer, you may be perfectly comfortable with Grunt, but once you get to the whole piping stuff, it's going to not make sense for you.
Yeah.
Especially, maybe you are okay with it if you're like a Java developer, but if you're C#, you are in Windows and you don't touch the terminal because all the Windows commands in the command line are completely terrible.
Uh-huh.
And they aren't even conventions to like name parameters. Mm-hmm. So it's...
Yeah.
It's something that you stay away from.
Yeah.
But for non-Windows developers, it's easier to... Well, you have more options.
Yeah. And have you found, like, with Grunt versus Gulp, I've kind of heard people talk about the idea that since with Gulp things are kind of streamed, that it seems to... feel faster because it reacts quicker or something, or you know, like
there's things. Two things about that. The first is that as far as I can remember, Gulp pretty much tells you it finished, but it really didn't.
Oh.
but the other thing is that it is indeed faster than Grunt, because Grunt tasks are trying to find the word for it, like self-contained.
Okay.
So that a Grunt task typically reads from disk rights to this.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So every time you're going to
and
from this.
Maybe for several files.
Yeah, yeah.
And each task you do, even if you compose them or whatever you do,
yeah,
they're going to each read, write.
Yeah.
And with Gulp, you're using streams so that everything happens in memory.
Yeah,
which, okay. Except that you're dealing with incredibly large files, is going to be faster and better.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I read maybe a blog article you wrote about talking about the two, maybe on your blog.
I wrote a blog post which was decently popular, which talked about Grunt, Gulp, and NPM.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah.
Because this article came out that said, like, Gulp is the new Grunt, Grunt is out.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, it wasn't like that. It was
right.
Just another option, like
yeah.
all the others I showed in these
yeah.
slides.
Yeah.
And it's cool, but it's yeah. not something that you should just jump ship and forget Grunt, drop it. It's dead.
Yeah.
Now we move on. Gulp.
Yeah. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Good, good. Yeah, there's a place for everybody.
Yeah.
Right? So, one of the other things, I guess, we were talking about in the talk was packaging or for JavaScript, you know, modularity and packaging. I guess I have a question about CommonJS, AMD, ES6 modules. What's your kind of thinking on those different things and all that?
Right, yeah. In general, I dislike very much the idea of behind requires.js because it's not well designed, in my opinion. It's like, on the one hand, you're first, obviously, you have all the boilerplate and functions and arrays that you need. But there's also the fact that you're supposedly working towards making every dependency be able to fetch the others asynchronously, and that's what happens in development. But when you go to release, it's not like that. The files aren't just laying around, they're all in a single bundle. And so why do you have all this complexity built into it from the beginning? It's like with Angular. I think Angular's worst decision ever was that in DI, they allow you to when you declare a function, the name of each argument is interpolated, and they say, okay, he's asking for log service, so he must want the log service service. And and the fact is that many people started using that, and they go and figure out why the minifier broke their code. And that's something that doesn't make any sense, because you have to use a minifier.
Yeah.
So you are basically enforcing, or not enforcing, but encouraging poor practices.
Yeah. So yeah, you could have a different, if you're running in development, dynamic loading, versus if you're running it for production, then you minimized it, and it could be missing something, or it could be configured wrong, or you know there could be it could run differently, like you said, if things didn't get built right. So
right.
So you don't even know that unless you're testing it again another way. So
yeah, the worst part is that they act as if it were a feature. But it's not. It's just a problem.
Yeah.
Because if you didn't have that interpolation thing, it would be better.
Yeah.
Without
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And then ES6 modules. I've read about them. They used to be much much worse than they currently are. But still, I think they should have just tried to figure out a way to make CommonJS work for the browser.
Just because it's simpler and.
Yeah. Yeah. And because you have all of NPM, like 80,000 packages that support CommonJS already, so why not use that to your advantage?
Yeah.
So I think that Browserify is the best option because it's the closest thing that you have to real modules and. And it has a huge community around,
yeah.
Not only Browserify itself, but also
yeah.
CommonJS.
Yeah. Okay, great. Do you, I guess with the new, HTTP 2.0, I don't know when it's going to be coming out, but, a few years or whatever, they're talking about where it's going to have parallel requests, and it's going to make that kind of more effective to not have things all in one file. You know, it can be because it can do individual right. pieces, and it can check if it's already got that, and return a 304 individually. But it's very efficient. Do you think that at that point, Browserify will probably adapt into something that works well with that, or maybe won't even. Maybe it'll be easy just to load them directly as CHS. Or I don't know. It's kind of hard to speculate. But
At that point, I guess ES6 modules will. Eventually, if JavaScript doesn't provide itself with other option, they're going to be adopted eventually. Besides CommonJS.
And the nice thing about having this huge community is that people are gonna, there's a lot of people that are gonna work on this and keep moving it forward. Yeah so good.
For Browserify. You can actually bundle in different smaller modules and still be able to require through each of those bundles.
Okay.
That's something that you can already do if you have a huge bundle. But
okay. Yeah. So that can work that way too. Okay. Have you run into any limitations? I actually need to learn about Browserify. And since it's really been taken off. And is there any limitations with how you use it, or anything that you can't do that you found so far?
There's the fact that you need to use static file names.
Okay.
So when you do require or read file sync or something like that, it's a problem because, for example, I started writing a small MVC component that works by first rendering on the server and then on the browser and sharing the routes.
Yeah.
The issue I had was that I wanted to just dynamically require the modules for each controller and for each template on the client side. But I just made a small CLI that built that dynamically because I didn't need to know at runtime. Mm-hmm. I just knew at compile time, but I didn't want the user of that MVC thing to have to list every single controller and template.
Yeah.
So in creating that CLI, I just added the build step. Mm-hmm. And got rid of that issue, that's mostly the only issue that there is for CommonJS.
Okay, good. Okay,
in my opinion.
Yeah, modularity. I think you mentioned in your talk about the whole idea with CommonJS being modules and one small. Purpose for each one, small, focused, tight code, that just does one thing well. Probably a larger part of your book as far as the modularity and that?
Yeah,
kind of
yeah. The second part of the book is dedicated to design. I mentioned all the different options you have for writing asynchronous code, for example. I look at a few different package managers, such as Component, Bower.
Oh, okay, good.
And yeah. NPM.
Yeah.
And I also talk about declaring the smallest amount of functionality in a single component and packing together everything that, in a way that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I try to explain people how to use Backbone in the browser.
Mm-hmm.
The book isn't really about Node; it's about JavaScript in general. So that's why I try to stay away as much as possible from node stuff.
Specific, yeah, okay.
You may see an express instance in one of the code samples, but you don't really interact with that, or it's not a core part of the core sample. Part.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is so what is your current thinking as far as all the different component ways to use components or build components or whatever? Is there one that's your favorite of them? Or
no, right now I hate all of them.
right.
I don't like web components. I don't like Polymer. I don't like not using those either.
Yeah. Too complicated, what's your feeling
too,
about?
I'm impractical.
Okay.
Like, web components is nice in theory, but it just doesn't work for me. And not doing anything is a problem too, because you have to have the people that are using your component remember to include the CSS and the JavaScript, and having the CSS in the JavaScript doesn't make any sense either.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a problem.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the biggest problems we have in web development.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one that I think Angular tackled pretty well.
Okay.
But it's not something that can be easily fixed without committing so much to a library.
Yeah.
React also is a good example of how to use a library to develop those components. But using something that's specifically just for componentizing your application, it's doesn't work very well with me.
Yeah. Okay. Of these things that we just mentioned, Angular and Backbone and React and all those, or vanilla JavaScript, is there one of your favorites? For do you prefer doing MVC style components, or what's your favorite mechanism for building guess apps? Or
I try to use MVC wherever I can. I worked a lot with Angular. I really liked it. I hadn't have a chance to work with React, but I really would like to, because I think it's pretty well built. I really like their idea of the virtual DOM, and if like a React guy is listening to this, he should pull that away from React and have it completely isolated from React, so that other people can use just the virtual DOM layer.
Okay.
That would be like tremendous.
Yeah, that could be huge, right? Yeah, that is that's a fascinating feature that they built into that, and the whole idea about just writing your code as if you don't have to worry about. You just update everything, and it'll figure out what changed. I mean, that's amazing. You know, it's a really neat thing. So, okay, great. And I guess maybe our final closing thought here is we might talk about is a little bit about what's it like to write a traditionally published book. You know, with O'Reilly and all that. When did you start, and what's kind of the process, and how does it work? I'm curious about that.
It's Manning, actually, but...
Oh, Manning, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So I started like 9 months ago, maybe a little less. It's a really painful process. I mean, you have to really want to write a book. It's not something that you can do lightly.
Yeah.
I had started writing in my blog for... I think it was 6 months before, and it kind of started tickling my brain, like it would be nice writing a book and not just blog posts. And so I just went for it. I sent an email to, I think it was O'Reilly, pretty sure, and they didn't answer for like a month.
Mm-hmm.
or no, actually I was super excited, so it was more like a week or two.
Mm-hmm.
and I sent the exact same email to Manning, and they replied like instantly.
Uh-huh.
So yeah. I went with them.
Okay, good.
So yeah, the process is, how to put it, it's cool because it helps you improve your writing style so much. You get to talk to a lot of different editors, and at first I thought maybe I could do the thing on my own, no editorial, the lean way, write Markdown all the way.
Right.
But yeah. It wouldn't have worked because they help you so much into the process. Maybe if you already written a book or two, you know the whole process and what kind of things to watch out for, then you are fine writing on your own. But I would recommend writing your first book at least with an editor.
Yeah, because you got a whole team of people that work with you, editors, and they're looking at different probably style and grammar and all this kind of stuff, right? Okay. Great.
Yeah, and even the voice. I mean, you have to have your own voice, but
yeah.
Maybe your like the whiz or use that you use are important too, and it's important to keep a consistent style across the whole book.
Yeah.
And you get to see it in print.
Yeah.
By a real publisher, so that's something that.
Yeah.
To get excited about.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I've got the early access copy, and I'm looking forward to the final release and all that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. How long? How
I just
long
want
is
to
it?
Hold it in my hands and say I made this.
Right. How long does it take to? Or when did you start? And how? You know, where are you at now, approximately percentage wise, or something?
Right. Right now, I finished writing the eighth book. Eighth chapter.
Yeah.
And I'm in the pre-release process of copy editing and whatnot. But there's still a few chapters more to develop.
Yeah.
We're figuring out how many.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be too long.
Yeah. Yeah.
But hopefully, definitely by the end of the year.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. And how can people follow you, and where was the best place to watch you and learn more about you and all that?
Right. I'm NSathGB on Twitter.
Okay.
And I also have a blog at ponyfood.com.
Okay.
I have a website, but you're not going to be able to type that in, so it's bevacqua.io.
Okay. Awesome. I'll put it in the show notes, yeah. So.
Okay.
All right, great. Nico, I appreciate you talking with me today, and it's a lot of great information, and
awesome.
And look forward to more of your stuff and your finished book.
Thanks.
All right, thanks.
I hope you've enjoyed this interview with Nico Bevacqua, discussing JavaScript tooling, app design, and his new book. The links and show notes are available at codewinds.com/10. If you would like to keep up on the latest in web developer news and training, follow me on codewinds.com, where I have a podcast, blog, and video training covering Node and JavaScript. Until next time, this is Jeff Barczewski with CodeWinds. Music by AudioNautix.com.